Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thank you for joining us. I'm Douglas Impuga.
Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, who hosted Saturday's summit, used strong language to condemn Israeli military operations on Gaza.
Arab and Islamic leaders condemn Israel's military operation in the Gaza Strip and call for an immediate ceasefire and more aid into the territory.
Like viewers are all preparing for the election on Tuesday, November 14th. Both parties are wrapping up with their campaign activities.
And global cases of tuberculosis continue to rise last year as disruption to health services caused by the COVID-19 pandemic set back efforts to fight the disease.
Fortunately, the incidence through TB is growing. We used to have a decline of 2% per year. And then due to COVID, we have now an increase for the last 2 years, 21 and 22, of almost 4%.
Liberia heads to competitive runoff between President Weah and former Vice President Boakai. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Lebanese Hezbollah militants fired anti-tank missiles at an Israeli community just over the border on Sunday, Israeli officials said, badly wounding utility workers as multiplying attacks from Lebanon threatened to escalate into another front in the Middle Eastern latest war. Also Sunday, the UN peacekeeping force in South Lebanon said one of its peacekeepers had been wounded by gunfire overnight near the Lebanese town of Al-Khwaza. It was not immediately clear where the shooting had come from or whether the peacekeepers were targeted or caught in crossfire. For the latest, let's join Ricky Rosen in Tel Aviv. Hi, Ricky.
Hi.
What's the latest, Ricky?
Well, as you said, the situation on the northern border has heated up significantly with the 15 rocket attacks came from Hezbollah in Lebanon, seriously wounding 6 civilians and 7 soldiers, and then the Israeli army fired missiles back at Hezbollah sites. In Gaza, Israeli troops are continuing to fight Hamas gunmen very close to the main Gaza hospital, Shifa, which Israel believes is the houses the main Hamas military headquarters.
Talking of the Gaza situation, what's Israel's response to the call from the Arab leaders yesterday meeting in Riyadh who are calling for an immediate ceasefire?
Well, Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu has rejected all the international condemnations and calls for ceasefires, including those coming from Macron in France and the United Nations and the Arab League, saying that Israel has to continue its fight to destroy Hamas despite all the international pressure. Israeli officials did point out that the resolution coming from the Arab leaders was actually not as hardline as what was originally proposed by Iran because of opposition from Arab countries which already have relations with Israel.
Ricky, what is there concern in Israel from what you're hearing about the rising death toll in the Gaza Strip?
I've heard many Israelis expressing sorrow about the suffering of Palestinian civilians in Gaza, but I think most Israelis are still focused now on the continuing humanitarian crisis of 240 hostages, Israeli hostages being held by Hamas. And the families of these hostages are pressuring the Israeli government not to give in to the international calls for a ceasefire until all of the hostages are released. And the government seems to be heeding those calls and blaming Hamas for being responsible for the harm to civilians because Hamas has located itself, according to the Israeli military, inside hospitals, inside schools, inside UN facilities that are supposed to be safe zones for Palestinian civilians.
Lastly, Ricky, there are reports that the Israeli government intended to evacuate children in those Gaza hospitals. Any news on that end?
All I know is that Prime Minister Netanyahu announced that he had offered that to the director of Shifa Hospital and that they had rejected the offer.
Thank you, Rosen. Thank you, Ricky.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ricky Rosen in Tel Aviv. Arab and Islamic leaders holding an extraordinary joint summit Saturday in the Saudi capital Riyadh condemned Israel's military operation in the Gaza Strip, with many leaders calling for an immediate ceasefire and more aid into the territory. The Hamas-run health ministry in Gaza says the Palestinian death toll has surpassed 11,000, mostly women and children. Israel launched its offensive in response to Hamas' October 7th terror attack in southern Israel. Israel officials say 1,200 people, mostly civilians, were killed and about 240 people taken hostage. The US, UK and the EU and several other Western countries have designated Hamas a terrorist organization. Edward Iranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
As Israel continued its military operation in the Gaza Strip, targeting Hamas for its October 7 attacks on Israel, Arab and Islamic leaders met in the Saudi capital Riyadh, blasting the Israeli operation and its heavy toll on Palestinian civilians and infrastructure. Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, who hosted Saturday's summit, used strong language to condemn Israeli military operations on Gaza. He says that we oppose this awful war in its entirety and its heavy toll on women, children, and the elderly, and on hospitals, places of worship, and civilian infrastructure. Saudi Arabia, he says, is working with its partners to put an end to this war, and we call for an immediate end to fighting and the opening of humanitarian corridors, in addition to the freeing of hostages and the innocent held by Hamas. Saudi-owned Al Arabiya TV reported the summit's resolutions call for the setup of an international war crimes tribunal and an end to any forced displacement of the Palestinian people inside Gaza or elsewhere, and an immediate ceasefire. Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi, whose visit to Saudi Arabia for Saturday's summit was the first by an Iranian president in more than a decade, claimed the Israeli military operation in Gaza was the worst crime witnessed in human history. Raisi went on to urge Arab and Islamic states to designate the Israeli army a terrorist group and to impose a boycott on Israel, including oil and other goods. He also demanded the establishment of a war crimes tribunal for both U.S. and Israeli leaders and officials who he claimed have committed war crimes in Gaza. Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, using a more measured tone, called for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza and the establishment of a Palestinian state in accordance with the borders of June 4, 1967, and with East Jerusalem as its capital.
إن مصر أدانت منذ البداية استهداف وقتل الأبرياء وترويع جميع المدنيين من الجانبين.
He says that Egypt has condemned the killing of the innocent since the outset, and we condemn once again this collective punishment of Gaza, including killings and the blockade and the unacceptable forced displacement of people, which he says cannot be justified as an act of self-defense. Sisi called on the international community and the UN Security Council to impose an immediate and unconditional ceasefire in Gaza and an end to any forced displacement of the Palestinian people, and for the international community to guarantee the security of civilians. He added that humanitarian aid must be allowed into Gaza and that Israel must bear its international responsibility as the occupying power to permit this passage of aid. Volker Turk, the UN human rights chief, who on Friday called Hamas' October 7 attack on Israel atrocious crimes, addressed the summit, decrying the war in Gaza and its human toll.
Across the Gaza Strip, more than 10,000 people have reportedly been killed, with the majority to be women and children. Many more are surely still under the rubble. The Israeli forces have pushed over 1.5 million people out of the north of the Gaza Strip.
It was not immediately clear what concrete actions the Arab and Islamic states were prepared to take to implement the resolutions or declarations made at Saturday's summit. Several Arab states, including Egypt, Jordan, and the United Arab Emirates, have diplomatic ties with Israel, while Iran, Syria, Lebanon, and Algeria do not. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Hi, this is Larry London, and I'd like to invite you to a brand new feature coming up on Tuesdays on Border Crossings. And we've got some great guests lined up. We're going to bring you our Tuesday Spotlight Artist of the Week. We will feature and highlight an interview and some live performances. And it's all happening on Border Crossings at 1500 Universal. This is something special that's coming in December on Tuesdays. Here on The Voice of America.
Liberians will vote on Tuesday in a runoff election between President George Weah and former Vice President Joseph Boakai. In the first round, neither was able to score over 50% of the vote to secure an outright victory. For more on Tuesday's election, earlier I reached reporter Denise Nipson in Monrovia. Hi, Denise. A day for the runoff election. How is the mood in Liberia now?
Okay, currently in Liberia, Liberians are all preparing for the election on Tuesday, November 14th. Both parties are wrapping up with their campaign activities. On yesterday, the United Party, which happens to be the party of the former Vice President Joseph Boakai, clamored their campaign rally. And on today, Sunday, the incumbent party, that is the Coalition for Democratic Change, CDC of George Weah, is also clamoring their campaign rally on today in the country.
These two, one is a former vice president, a veteran politician. George Weah is the current president. How are the people weighing them since they didn't quite make it in the first round?
As it relates to the runoff election, currently with the campaign activities, you realize that the lesser winners, those parties that had less votes, are currently endorsing both sides as it relates to the runoff election. So President George Weah, who is the incumbent, has received some endorsement from other parties across the country. Also, the former Vice President, Joseph Boakai, has also received endorsement from other parties as well. And currently, the campaign activities is seeing a new trend mainly as it relates to the tribal politics. So you have the former vice president who is from the north, though the regional politics is in play, but also you have people now talking about tribal issues. This person is from the other candidates, is from the other side, the other tribe, so we have to support them. You have the incumbent President George Weah, who is from the southeast as well, and his people in terms of the regional black politics is playing a major factor as it relates to the election. Although some Liberians are speaking on that, saying it is not good that Liberians do vote based on regional or tribal lines, because they should look at the issues that are unfolding in the country before you can support a candidate.
Last election, the election went rather smoothly. Is the Electoral Commission prepared since there are only two candidates this time?
Yes. As of what we are aware of, the National Elections Commission is preparing for the runoff election on Tuesday that is expected to go on across the country, knowing that this time around, you only have two candidates in the race as compared to the first round of election where you had 20 candidates. So with the National Elections Commission and other civil society organizations as well as other Liberians and groupings are carrying on the CVE. The CVE is the Civic and Voter Education to educate Liberians on how to vote, because the first round election Liberians witnessed high number of invalid votes. Over 140,000 invalid votes was announced. So this time around, Liberians are concerned about reducing the number of invalid votes. So the campaign activities are ongoing across the country and will be climaxing so that on Tuesday, Liberians can go to the polls to elect the person who will be the winner of the election. And this time around, it's not about the absolute majority. It's not about 50 plus one. But the candidate that gets the most votes in the election will win the election.
And do we think the results will be announced soon, immediately after the election? What's the timeline of the commission?
As it relates to the Constitution says within 15 days. It means that the Elections Commission can announce the results within 2 days, within 3 days, depending on the circumstances as it relates to how they gather their reports from across the country. That will determine whether the pronouncement of the winner or declaration of the winner will be done perhaps within less than a week or more than a week as it relates to the election matters. But we are waiting and hoping to see this time around. How will it be knowing that the runoff election is just two-party and not more or what have been done in the first round of election where the National Elections Commission had to be counting because we have the general election. We have Liberians voting for representatives and senators as well as the president. So that was very huge in the first round election.
Denise Simpson, she spoke with me earlier from the Liberian capital, Monrovia. Energy transition and the new climate change fund for the Global South are said to be among the most contentious issues at the UN Climate Conference in Dubai that begins later this month. Charmaine Lee reports for VOA from Berlin.
Extreme weather events like historic heat waves have swept through several continents this year. The frequency and intensity of these heat waves is attributed by most climate scientists to the burning of humans of fossil fuels. Pressures on countries to further slash emissions and better prepare their societies for the impact of warmer temperatures is mounting ahead of the COP28 conference, where an expected 70,000 delegates from 197 countries will discuss the world's climate future. This follows the release of the first-ever Global Stocktake Report from the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. The report says the world is far from meeting a goal of limiting global temperature rises to 1.5 degrees Celsius. Nations will face tough negotiations over a deal to phase out fossil fuels. At COP27 last year, some negotiators were left disappointed after countries agreed only on phasing down fossil fuels. The difficulty will continue this year, said Nicholas Herner, founder of climate NGO New Climate Institute and former official with the UN agency tasked with addressing climate change.
We need to phase out coal, oil and gas everywhere. That would be indeed a big step forward. It will be a challenge to get an agreement there, but from my point of view, there's two alternative formulations. One is to phase down fossil fuels, and the other one is to phase down unabated fossil fuels, or phase out unabated fossil fuels. In both cases, you leave the door open to something.
By unabated fossil fuels, he means those whose emissions are allowed to enter the atmosphere rather than captured in some way. Another negotiation topic will be on a loss and damage fund. This fund was established last year to provide extra climate finance to vulnerable countries, many in the Global South, to help them adapt to climate impacts. Developed countries, which caused a larger share of historic emissions, are expected to pay more into the fund, but the details of who and how much will be hammered out at COP28. Still in dispute is whether the World Bank should host a fund. Global South countries have their concerns, according to Shavkat Karkakal, board chairperson of Pakistan's Sustainable Development Policy Institute and the country's former climate negotiator.
The United States led the campaign that this fund should be managed by the World Bank. Developing countries don't want that. They want an independent kind of management of the fund.
The conference will run from November 27th to December 12th in Dubai. Shiming Li, VOA News, Berlin.
Last week, there was fresh eruption of fighting in northern Ethiopia with Fano militiamen fighting the Ethiopian army in the Amhara region. The fighting, according to analysts, marks Ethiopia's most serious security crisis since a two-year civil war in the neighboring region of Tigray ended a year ago. There's also concern about strained relations with neighboring Eritrea after Mr. Abe publicly raised the question of Ethiopia's access to the sea. Dr. Edgar Githui is an international relations, security and diplomatic expert at the U.S. International University in Nairobi. He tells me that Ethiopia still has a tough task of nation building.
All of a sudden now, Abe is fighting. He's finished fighting the Tigres. Now he's fought the Oromos. He's fought so many people. The problem with Prime Minister Abe, in my view, is that he's trying to consolidate power at all costs. And eventually, it is going to become very detrimental to him because sooner or later, all these groups that have been fighting him individually might gang up against him. Because like the Fano, he sided with the Fano to beat up one group, the other side. He sided with his, then he fought the Tigrinians on that side. They at least have come to some sort of small ceasefire. But all these small fights he keep on picking in his country will leave him vulnerable because all these small groups are going to amalgamate and become one big headache for him and probably try and push him out of power. That is a danger I see. That is a risk I see him heading into.
And what do you make of the Ethiopian Federation? Because these are big ethnic groups that constitute Ethiopia. We have the Amhara, the big largest group. We have the Tigray in the north. We have the Oromo down in the south. What does it mean? This mean for the Ethiopia as a nation?
I think what Ethiopia is eventually going to realize is that, yes, they have a state called Ethiopia, but they have still not yet built the nation. Building the nation is very different from having the state. The state is the territory, but the nation is the people feeling they all belong, all feeling patriotic enough, all feeling that they are equal, that there is no preferential treatment. And that is the thing that Ethiopia has not been able to build for the longest time because of the kind of leaders they've had in the past. Hengistu, Haile Mariam, Hengistu, you know, all those past leaders used to divide and rule among them, you know, just playing off these big ethnic groups against each other. So I think the challenge for Ethiopia is that quest in nation building. It is not going to be easy because that involves having a government that is all-inclusive, and that is not what Abiy has currently. He came and all of a sudden decided to throw all the Tigrinians out or sideline them from government until they are bitter about him. So I think for Ethiopia, the puzzle is in building nationhood, the quest for nationhood. How do you make all Ethiopians feel equal? How do you make them feel included? How do you create an inclusive state government such that all these ethnic groups feel we are part of the system and we are not being taken advantage of or we are not being overlooked?
In this current situation, the short term, taking the political way, is it possible, in your opinion, to have a government that can actually aspire to build the nation, as you say?
In my view, Prime Minister Abiy started off wrongly. He started off by sidelining the Tigrinians. So he'll have to bend over backwards to really accommodate them. And remember, he sidelined them so that he could please other groups as well. So if he's seen to start moving towards them, he'll also upset his power base. He'll upset the other people who are supporting him. So he's in a very tricky position. I am not saying it is impossible, but it will come at great cost to him. It will come at great cost because he began off by sidelining the Tigrinians. And now, if he's seen trying to move towards them or to incorporate them, I don't know how the other ethnic groups and his other supporters are going to start feeling. Will they start feeling threatened that maybe they're going to be left out? So he has a very delicate balancing act in front of him to be able to continue governing peacefully for the remainder of his term. And if at all he seeks re-election, those will be some of the sticking points for him.
That's Edgar Githui, an international relations, security and diplomatic expert at the U.S. International University in Nairobi. He spoke with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Mali is facing extraordinary crises, including armed conflict and political instability, and there has been a campaign for the Biden administration to grant temporary protected status to members of the Malian community staying and working here in the U.S. My colleague David Vandy talks to Abdurrahman Touré, the leader of the Malian community in Washington, D.C.
There has been a campaign for the Biden administration to grant temporary protected status, TPS, to members of the Malian community here in the United States. So, Abdurrahman, how has the Malian community received this news?
We got the news from the organization called African Community Together with Diana, which is a national policy director for African Community Together. So way before the campaign started, I approached her and I told her so many countries got the TPS, so why not Mali? Because Mali is a really, really bad situation with the conflict, army and everything. So that's the reason why we've been working together for a few months, and that's how we got really the news about the TPS.
We know that Mali is facing extraordinary crisis, including armed conflict and political instability. So how significant would this granting of the TPS, the temporary protected status, be to Malian citizens that are staying and working here in the U.S.?
It's very important because, like, Malian people who live in the U.S., when they grant this TPS, temporary protected status, we will be very happy because they're going to get work permit, they're going to get a drive license, and also they can go out of the U.S. and come back. Because people living here for several years didn't get any chance to do this kind of a situation and go back to see the families. And it will be very helpful to all the Malian people in the U.S. who is going to be eligible for this TPS to work legally and pay the taxes of this country. And also they can have a nice job and also send money and to support back family.
So finally, Abdurrahman, if this is granted, if it is designated the TPS, it would protect over 2,000 Malians in the United States from deportation, as well as allowing them to work temporarily here in the United States. So what is your role as a community leader? What is the role that you've been playing to achieving this?
My role is always consistent to help the Malian community in the U.S. To get off from this situation, because when they get a TPS, they will be able to work initially in the U.S. and also pay taxes. This is one of the important things. And also, we are very Malian community in the U.S. We work together, so we also see each other together. We celebrate our country independence. And also, Malian people will be very, very happy to get this TPS.
Global cases of tuberculosis continued to rise last year as disruption to health services caused by the COVID-19 pandemic set back efforts to fight the disease, according to the latest annual report from the World Health Organization. Henry Ridgewell reports.
Despite being treatable and curable, tuberculosis, or TB, remains one of the world's deadliest infectious diseases, causing an estimated 1.3 million deaths in 2022, according to the latest World Health Organization figures. That's a reduction of around 19% on the previous year. But there was a small increase in the number of cases to an estimated 10.6 million. Some 40% of people living with TB are undiagnosed and untreated. The COVID-19 pandemic, which began in 2020, overwhelmed health services in many parts of the world, and TB diagnosis and treatment levels plummeted. Dr. Luchika Ditu is executive director of the Stop TB Partnership, based in Geneva.
Fortunately, the incidence through TB is growing. We used to have a decline of 2% per year. And then due to COVID, we have now an increase for the last 2 years, 21 and 22, of almost 4%.
The World Health Organization estimates COVID-related disruptions resulted in almost 500,000 excess deaths from TB in the 3 years from 2020 to 2022. The report also reveals a concerning lack of progress in some areas. Again, Dr. Luchika Ditu.
We have a pretty difficult situation on people with drug-resistant TB as well as childhood TB. So drug-resistant TB, short of 200,000 people were diagnosed and put in treatment. And exactly as WHO said, 2 out of 5 people with drug-resistant TB had access to drug-resistant TB treatment.
But the fight against TB is getting back on track. The number of cases diagnosed globally last year was 7.5 million, the highest ever recorded. Again, Dr. Luchika Ditu of the Stop TB Partnership.
This shows that the countries buckled up to recover after COVID and even jump above the level before COVID.
A promising TB vaccine made by GlaxoSmithKline is currently in the final stage of trials, and more than a dozen other vaccines are undergoing testing.
We need a vaccine. So that will be the game changer. What it implies, I tell you what it implies. It implies to have either a vaccine that works perfectly on different age groups or several vaccines to complement each other.
The 19% fall in deaths from TB is still far short of the World Health Organization's target of a 75% reduction by 2025. Funding also fell short, reaching less than half of the WHO target of at least $13 billion for TB diagnosis, treatment and prevention services in 2022. Governments committed to spending $22 billion a year on TB by 2027 at a special UN meeting in September. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News, London.
You are listening to Nathan Africa, and coming up in the second half of the program, sports. A commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs, and music from our African collection. And now in Nederland Africa Sports, we join Samson O'Malley in Abuja. Hello, Samson.
Hi, Douglas, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. A ruthless sporting club, de Casablanca, qualified for their first ever CAF Women's Champions League semi-final after a commanding 4-1 victory over JKT Queens of Tanzania on Saturday. The Moroccans secured their ticket in the last four after overcoming the Tanzanians at the Laurent Poku Stadium in San Pedro. In an early kickoff on Saturday, Mamelodi Sundowns of South Africa cemented their status as favourites for the CAF Women's Champions League title with a comfortable 3-0 victory over Atletico de Abidjan. The South African champions topped their group for the third consecutive edition after second-half goals from Matoba Cisse and Refile Tebogo, who scored twice in the Group A match. Elsewhere, Eritrea have withdrawn from qualifiers for the 2026 FIFA World Cup just 6 days before their opening game. No reason was given for the withdrawal. Eritrea were in Group E and were scheduled to begin their campaign in Morocco on November the 16th. Group E of the African qualifiers will now be contested by the five remaining teams of Morocco, Zambia, Congo, Tanzania, and Niger. World governing body FIFA confirmed Eritrea's withdrawal on its website. And to Ghana, where Ghana international Raphael Dwamena has died at the age of 28 after collapsing on the field during a match in Albania. The Ghana Football Association in a statement said he suffered a heart attack. Dwamena made his Ghana debut in June 2017 and scored two goals in that game. He made eight appearances overall for the national team. And now to tennis, where Tunisian Ons Jabeur defeated Annette Contaveit in three sets of 6-4, 4-6, 10-7 in Contaveit's farewell exhibition match on Saturday in Tallinn, Estonia. Contaveit, who is currently ranked 81st in the world and was ranked second last year, is still suffering from the effects of a serious back injury that forced her to end her career at the age of 27. This will be Jabeur's last match of the season. In cricket news, South Africa Proteas captain Themba Bavuma faces a race against time to be fit for the Cricket World Cup semi-final match against Australia on Thursday. The 33-year-old sustained a right hamstring strain during Friday's Cricket World Cup match against Afghanistan in Ahmedabad, India. Cricket South Africa on Saturday said Bavuma has showed an improvement overnight. It was speculated that the struggling captain could go for a scan. The Proteas will face Australia this Thursday in Kolkata as they look to reach their first ever World Cup cricket final. Still with cricket, the African qualifiers for the 2024 ICC Men's
T20 World Cup that will be hosted by the United States of America and West Indies in June kicks off in Windhoek from November 20th to December the 1st. The seven teams that will participate in the qualifiers include Namibia, Uganda, Kenya, Nigeria, Rwanda, Tanzania, and Zimbabwe. Two slots are at stake for the World Cup. And that's it for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Douglas.
Thanks, Samson. Now, let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospects in time of conflict and in time of peace. Here is one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Secretary General for Political Affairs. Take it away, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. Last week was the most discouraging of the five-week war in Gaza. Pronouncements made by the Prime Minister of Israel, Netanyahu, and leader of group in southern Lebanon were quite disturbing. Israeli Prime Minister stated dogmatically that Israel will be the only guarantor for maintaining security in Gaza at the end of the war. He did not explain how this could be accomplished, so it is left to different interpretation. And then Nasrallah spokesperson in Lebanon says that Hezbollah, looking at present developments, is not sure that the spread of war in the Middle East could be contained. But we did have a pushback by Secretary of State Blinken in the Tokyo Foreign Ministers meeting. He made clear that from the American point of view, they could not accept the determination made by Prime Minister Netanyahu. There was no response to Nasrallah's statement about a wider war, but some have seen some constraint in the behavior of the group nevertheless, although exchange of fire continues. Also, yesterday, there was a joint meeting of the League of Arab States and the OIC Islamic Conference, combining the summit meetings of the Islamic Conference scheduled for today. So we have these statements, but the time has come that a decision be made. These outside efforts, though useful, cannot be contributing to a final solution of the Middle East question. Until the mid-70s, it was the Arabs' accepted stand, enunciated by the Egyptian President Abdel Nasser, that while the United Nations created a mess, as they call it, by the partition of Palestine, the United Nations has the responsibility to resolve the matter. This has been also the common position of the Arab states. It was President Sadat of Egypt, however, who, not wanting to prolong negotiation, tried to use what was called the American card. Sadat, as many commentators even today, believes that only American can, quote Sadat, squeeze Israel to make concessions. But realists know that this is not so. And differences announced this last week between Prime Minister Netanyahu and even President Biden shows there is a limitation for the Americans to convince Israel to do what Israel does not want to do. So the best action now is to collect all these outside developments, the statement made by Blinken at Tokyo, communique of the joint session of the Arab League and the OIC, and other worthwhile statements, and centralize it in the Security Council. Yes, it is true that the Security Council has failed thus far, but maybe the Council should be given one more opportunity to see what it could do. And this must be done urgently, because there is no time to waste. The killings must stop. We have a situation where in the fifth week, we see two things. One, the Israeli gave downward count of the casualty on 1,500 to 1,200. And they said there might be even further reduction. But in Gaza, we see the killing field increasing the death counts. Now it is 11,000. And what is most difficult to accept, that we now have at the last count on Friday, 4,500 children killed. This is unprecedented in global warfare, and that too cannot continue. Look around in the world, every corner of the world, and see those ardent demonstrations. And it's not going to stop. No amount of criticism that these are only pro-Palestinian demonstration sympathizers or anti-Israel. No, that's not true. These are people who, like canaries in the coal mine, could see that the escalatory steps being taken will lead to disaster. And let no one tell you that the UN is biased against Israel. No, it was the United Nations that made the partition plan and passed it in the General Assembly, not in the Security Council. And it was on the basis of that decision that David Ben-Gurion declared the independence of Israel. Thank you.
That was one man's point of view, a commentary by Dr. James Jonam, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. It's Sunday on Late Line Africa, and this is the time we get relaxed and reflect with music from the continent.
For you. You got me smiling with my people and I'm loving her. You see me genie, I'm a Nazi, I'm emotional. A certain feeling I can't find and I'm devotional. Wait.
You can find me by the ocean chilling for hours. I know I'm not the type to wait, I'll go alone. Natangulia ukifika, baby, just holler. But if you don't come through, too fly, body going up in the 255. So tell me what you're trying to do. I got plans for you. If you can bust a move,
na muda mwafaka. Natafta tumapene madialiwa, got my blessings, nazi kamata. I mean I'm so proper, believing in myself, I got these bars. Play with me, I blow your whole spot up. I'm heartbroken in the heart that I know. I got a lot of pain, but it's something I control. I got my trust in God, so don't ever call me bro. You tryna finesse me, I'ma treat you like a one time for TZ. Hey, why they scream my name, cause I run my CT. I ain't worried about the fame, cause I'm live, I'm litty. Catch me smiling on the stage, your girl call me pretty. Wait,
huh? You can find me by the ocean chilling for hours. I know I'm not the type to wait, I'll go alone. Natangulia ukifika, baby, just holler. But if you don't come through, it's cool. My city too fly, body going up in the 255. So tell me what you're trying to do. I got plans for you.
Yo, no wonder it's like, yo, this one's really, really good. I'm very proud of you, for real.
Thank you, thank you. I appreciate it. That's one of the most, it's one of the most heartfelt songs. Like, I get emotional listening to it.
Yo, it gives me, like, I got chill bumps.
Yeah, like where I was at mentally when I recorded it and stuff like that. It was so many emotions, like happiness that I was in Tanzania, but also like sadness because of the loss that I was experiencing, and like anger, you know, just a whole bunch of mix of feelings. And I feel like that was the perfect way for me to channel it.
Wow. And for you to be so emotional at that time and write such profound lyrics that anyone can relate to, mm-hmm. is just outstanding. And the way it hit me is because whenever I feel like that, I always go to the water.
Right.
I go to the water for clarity.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is, and just to hear the lyrics and how they was put together, mm-hmm. it was just phenomenal. Yo, that was good.
Thank you.
That was really good.
And a fun fact is that me and the girl, her name is Nyomisia. She's a artist from Tanzania. She's currently based in Kenya, I believe. I think she's back and forth. But it sounds like we recorded it together, like in the same room, but we didn't.
It does.
We did not.
I mean, it's like, whoever put this together.
I recorded
my
parts.
African producers.
And then I sent it to, I had my friend Ibrahim. I had him listen to it. And he's like, what if we get so-and-so on it? And I'm like, yeah, let's see what's up. And she did it and it came back. I remember when they sent it back, I literally cried.
Yeah, because as I'm listening to it, I'm thinking like, who's the girl? Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking like, yeah, she got, you guys connect on this track. You guys connect.
Yeah.
It just flowed. Like
she,
he was writing it.
She wrote
other.
That.
Right.
She wrote that chorus thing. Like I didn't give her like a topic, like, hey, like this is about this or anything like that. She kind of just went with it. And when I heard it, I texted her. I'm like, yo, like, that's crazy. And she's like, yeah, like I felt the emotion in your verses. So I kind of knew what direction to take. So.
Yeah, that, and I'm all emotional. You got me all flustered over here.
Maybe we should have started with that.
That is crazy. You are amazing. I had no idea.
Thank you. So.
Yeah, so you got that kingly vibration going on.
Yep.
All right, yep. Let's hear from Overdose. Let's see what you got. Tunes.
So lovely, from your skin to your eyes, we behold your glory. My Laika, my angel, my key, and my queen, God's greatest creation. There's no ABCs to describe your love, your strength, your strong perseverance, persistence, and power, your royal appearance. I'm so inspired by you. You fed me, you raised me, brought me to my truth. So I'm speaking to my moms today. But every woman got their strong tendencies. It's in their nature to just nurture, to care, and to love, and to pray our enemies away. Hey, and then I gotta speak to my ladies. I love it just to how you swing and you sway. I'm out here vibing to the beats in my bay, and I don't need another high cause I'm just flying away. My baby, give me overdose, overdose, overdose. My baby, give me overdose, overdose, overdose. Say, but give me overdose, overdose, overdose. And she give me overdose, overdose, overdose. Hey, mami na liaski ani na kyo kwambi na bamba na on my way. Na taftanji ani akuona wewe daima na milele feels. Overdose, overdose. And she give me overdose, overdose, overdose. Take me down, baby, leave me up daily, revive my penzilio. I know me, you know I know, we build a legacy. So I'm grinding and I'm stuck in it, you know how I get it. I pray, I spit, I verse, and then I'm stacking it. And I'm gonna need my account to the life, phone number, digits. When I get it, I'm a builder, then I spit the dividends. I'm in this click for more than just a brick. I've been on it since I was 8, 9, 7 on the plate. Got a lot on my chain, so my 6 is never late. I asked her for her name, then I took her on a date. We've been close ever since, so the focus never hating, no. I know a lot of skeeches, they've been waiting, trying to crush my greatness, but I'm on my patience road. My baby, baby, give me overdose, overdose, overdose. My baby, give me overdose, overdose, overdose. Say, my give me overdose, overdose, overdose. And she give me overdose, overdose, overdose. Hey, mami na liaski, ani na vyo kwambi, ana bamba na on my way. Na tafta njia ni ya kuwana wewe, daima na milele feels. Overdose, overdose. So she give me overdose, overdose, overdose.
Overdose, overdose, overdose.
Fatu, fatu, c'est bon.
I love this song, and the hook is so catchy. My baby, give me overdose, overdose, overdose. Yo, Jumbe, Mr. TZ.
Yep. Open those.
That was nice.
Thank you.
I loved it. Ever since the first time I heard it, it's just like I'd be like singing it. The hook is like really, really catchy though.
Yeah, that's what I try to. That's what I try to strive for when I'm like writing choruses. I try to get something that's catchy. That like
and
even
it just
if you're
flows
not,
good though.
Yeah.
I mean, you have some serious writing skills.
Thank you. It is
phenomenal.
Thank you. I'm very good at like even before I write songs. I don't just go straight and do the lyrics. Like, I would listen to a beat and be like, na 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 na, and try to figure out like my cadence and my flow and stuff like that. So when I got that melody, it was just about finding some lyrics. So I'm like, what did I say? I said, you want to party? Something like that. I want to party. You want to Faji? So Faji, and I forgot what language it is in Nigeria. It means like you want to enjoy. So I'm like, you want to party? I want to Faji. And also in the song, I'm like mixing Swahili and English. Most of the song is like in English. So people here can vibe with it too.
Yo, and that's another thing that I love too. You know, I love so many things, but the fact that you was able to merge the Swahili with the English, because people that don't speak Swahili can mm-hmm. you know what I mean, get
and
the English
that
version
don't
and
speak English can get the
it's like a genius. Like,
yeah. And my thing, like my whole thing is like it plays into my identity. I was born and raised here in America, but my roots are in Tanzania. So if I'm gonna make Tanzanian music but I'm living here and the people that are around me are like American, how are they gonna listen to it? So
that's
I'm like,
true. You're absolutely right, because
so my first,
I would have listened and I would have just been vibing on the beat,
right?
But I wouldn't know the content.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, let's go to the next cut. Was Trust Me.
Yes.
Mr. TZ and Trust Me. We'll be right back.
Dancing up on me, girl, move your body. Sasa mo be the one, baby, get you acting naughty. From the left to the front to the back, they wanna party. Girl, show me love, yeah. Move your body, come party. You know I can't be, yeah. I show the world I could feel that, my baby. Just hold in my hand.
Where they can find you on Instagram, your email address, if someone wanted to contact you and maybe ask you some questions about music or your organization that you're affiliated mm-hmm. with like-minded people, give us that information.
Alright, my first and foremost, the most important place to find me at is YouTube, because that's where I'm dropping my music, my music videos and things like that. So that's Mr. TZ MR.TZ, and you see the person with the Tanzanian flag, that's me. Or you can put in Mr. TZ Trust Me and then you'll probably find me. That's the easy way.
And that was our Sunday music spot on Nightline Africa from the English service of the Voice of America. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us tonight. Hope you enjoyed the program. And as you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours. Join us again on Saturday. Have a very good evening.